Good morning. Today's Av Megillah Chaf Ches. We are in Chaf Zayin Amud Beis, and we're starting today with the Mishnah that is about a quarter of the way down. We're a little bit behind, but not much. Anyway, we are continuing our discussion regarding the halachas of Eshol, and specifically that of the sale of Eshol. Mishnah Chaf Zayin Amud Beis describes a mochin beis kenesis el al tanai. So you can sell Eshol, but only but only on condition shem yirtzu yachziru divrei meir. So according to Shitas Rav Meir, so the only condition that one can sell a shul is only with a buyback clause. So that means to say that the seller is always going to have an ability to buy back the shul. V'chachamim omrim mochrin osa memkar olam. According to the chachamim, no, you could sell a shul, and it could be a permanent sale, chutz be'arba dvarim, but there are going to be four things that are so demeaning that they cannot be done in the purchased property. So, and they are l'meir chutz l'borsiki l'tzvila beis amayim. So you can't use it as a bathhouse or as a tannery or as a base of tefillah. Base of mayim, Rashi offers two pshatim over here what a base of mayim means, but let's assume that it's a urinal, and that obviously would be extraordinarily demeaning. That's one of Rashi's pshatim. Rav Yehuda Amar Mochen Osam L'Shem Chatzir V'Lokech Mashiyir Tiyaseh. Rav Yehuda is of the position that when it's sold, it has to be sold L'Shem Chatzir, but once it's purchased, the purchaser can do whatever he wants with it, and presumably even the demeaning activities which were limited by the Chachamim. So according to Shitas Rav Yehuda, you could do that as well. Okay, so what I noted yesterday, and I'll just quickly note today, is that assuming that our girsa is Rav Meir, meaning that's the girsa in our Mishnah, that's the girsa in the previous Mishnah, so you see that Rav Meir is extraordinarily reluctant to sell a shul altogether. In fact, in this Mishnah that we just learned together, so Rav Meir says that the only way that you can sell a shul is only where the seller has a buyback clause. Okay, and that means that indefinitely, he's always going to be in a position where he can buy it back. So that's a funny sale. You don't normally describe that as a sale. That anytime he wants, the seller can go ahead and buy it back. It's an unusual clause that you put in a sale. But according to Rav Meir, when dealing with a shul, so because of the kedushas beis hakneses, because of the sanctity, is so high from Rav Meir's standpoint that you have to throw in such a clause. Okay, the Gemara is going to be focusing now for the first part of the discussion on this buyback clause, and specifically with the issues of ribis. So, consider the following. So now, according to Rav Meir, so you are now in a position where you went ahead and you purchased the shul. We're going to look at it from the perspective of the buyer. So what the buyer did now is that he bought the shul, and then what happens is that the seller exercises buyback clause. And now what happens is the following. So again, everything we're looking at now from the perspective of the buyer. So what the buyer did basically is he gave somebody a nice sum of money. He went ahead and he lived in the house, and then, I don't know, a month later, 2 months later, the money was returned to him. So effectively, what we're talking right now is a loan, okay? And now, from the perspective of the buyer, so he now basically serves as the lender in this sequence, and on top of that, not only did he lend money, but he also enjoyed the benefit of the home for whatever the duration of the loan was. So he lent money, he got the money back, and he also got extra benefit as well. So in halacha, you know what we call that extra benefit? That's called ribis. It's called interest. And the Torah prohibits it when it's one Jew to another Jew. So you have this kind of transaction. So that is prohibited by the Torah. And so what the Gemara now wants to know is that, look, for Rav Meir, so because of this buyback policy, so therefore what this could result in is an issur ribis. It could be an issue of interest. So Amar Rav Yochanan Rav Meir b'shitas Rav Yehuda Amar da'amar tzadecha b'ribis mutar. Okay, so the Gemara is going to have two solutions to this problem. Solution number one of the Gemara is that this is what's called tzad echa beribis. So tzad echa beribis, so when we get to Bava Metzia and we get to the somewhat challenging parak that deals with the halachas of ribis, we're going to mention it just briefly over here. So there is an opinion out there that says that if a loan will not necessarily result in ribis, so then even if it does, so then it would be mutter. This is what's called tzad echa beribis. Ditanya, the Gemara here quotes the Brisa, Arishayanosh bechaver manav asalo sadeo mecher. So let's say that I owed somebody a good amount of money, a mana, and so what I do is that look, I say to him, let me sell you the field. So bezman shemocher ochel peros mutter. So if the seller is eating the peros, that would be fine. However, lokech ochel peros aser. But if the lokech is going ahead and eating the produce, so that would be aser. Because from the lokech standpoint, once again, what's the lokech? The lokech in this case is a lender. And now what the lender does is that in addition to lending money, you also is going to be eating fruit as well. That fruit is going to be an added benefit. That added benefit is called ribis, and therefore it's going to be usher. And Rav Yehuda omer afilo kechol cheperos mutter. And Rav Yehuda is of the position that nah, if the lokech is eating the pears, that would be mutter. The amr Rav Yehuda ma'isa bebaitus ben zunin sha'asa sadeh amecher. Al pi Rav Elazar ben Azariah velo kechol cheperos ayam. So in fact, Rav Yehuda says, look, I have a precedent. So I'm going to tell you an episode where this actually happened. Where once again, a person owed a lot of money. And so what he did is he sold his property. Then in the event that the borrower ended up collecting the money, the necessary money to pay back the loan, and he actually paid back the loan, and he took back his property. So again, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he cited this scenario where the lokech was the one who ate all the fruit, and it was fine. Because again, this falls under the category of tzad echad beribis. And again, just to clarify this a little bit better, tzad echad beribis means that, look, in this transaction, it may be the sale of the property, or what I may end up doing is I may end up buying back the property, and it'll just be a loan. But at this point in time, it could go either way. So because of that possibility where there are two different conclusions and how this could end, so therefore this is what's called tzad echad beribis. So since ribis is only a possibility, not an absolute, so therefore it would be mutter. So amr lo misham raya mocher ochel peres hayav lo lokech. So they say to Rabbi Yehuda, well, the truth of the matter is that you got the story wrong. Meaning it wasn't the lokech who was consuming the fruit, it was the mocher who consumed the fruit, and you just simply don't have the facts correct regarding the episode. Anyway, but my beinayu, the Gemara points out over here, tzadecha beribis, ika beinayu, mar savar tzadecha beribis mutter, mar savar tzadecha beribis aser. And as far as the machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda, it's exactly this issue. Meaning that when I have a transaction where it's not necessarily going to be ribis, it could be ribis. Again, there are two outcomes, there are two possible outcomes. And so therefore, under those circumstances, even if the outcome is that it was a loan, nevertheless, the ribis under those circumstances would be mutter according to Rav Yehuda, and according to the Chochamim would be aser. So over here, in the buyback clause, let's go all the way back to our Mishnah. So in the buyback clause of Rebbe Meir, where Rebbe Meir says that the only way you can sell the shul is with a buyback clause. So now, upon the exercising of that clause, so now what comes out is that the purchaser now is going to be viewed as a lender, and he's also going to be getting all that extra benefit of having lived in the house all that time. And so now, isn't that a violation of ribis? So the answer to our question is that no, technically it's not ribis. Why? Because you don't know if the seller is going to exercise his buyback clause. And if he doesn't exercise the buyback clause, so then it won't result in ribis. So because there are two possibilities, and we don't know which way it necessarily will end up, so therefore, even if it does end up as being a loan, that doesn't qualify as ribis. This is what's called tzad echad beribis. Obviously, I gave a really cursory explanation of tzad echad beribis. We need to understand a lot better. Just because there are two possibilities, and just because there is another out to this transaction, so therefore it doesn't result. Therefore, the Torah ignores the ribis aspect of it. It definitely demands more of an explanation. But in the meantime, however, that's the basic idea over here. And that's why it doesn't violate ribis. That's all one explanation. A second explanation, Rav Amar dekulei amar tzad echad beribis aser. Rav says, no, we don't have to lean on that shita. Meaning we could suggest right now that everyone holds that tzad echad beribis is in fact aser. V'acha ribis amanas la'achzer, ike beinayu mar savar ribis amanas la'achzer mutter, umar savar aser. What if it is a loan, and at the end of the loan, now that you violated ribis, can I just simply give you back the interest, and so to say, remove the isser? That's the question. So again, over here, what happened is that I purchased a shul. I then made usage of the shul, right, for whatever benefit I got from it. And then the seller exercises buyback clause. So now that means that this is no longer a sale. Now it's a loan. And now consider all the extra benefit that I received. In other words, basically, I got free rent for whatever the duration of the sale was. So now the halacha would be, according to Rav Meir, is that let's say we were to estimate, approximate how much benefit I received from it, and then I gave all that money back to the lender. Under those circumstances, back to the borrower. So under those circumstances, can we undo the issur ribis? So the Gemara says that's exactly at the issue over here, and Rav Meir happens to be of the position that yes, you can undo the issur ribis. So if I return the accrued interest of the loan, so then it would be it would no longer be an Isser.
Renting,
that's what Rav Meir says. Rav Meir says that it's not going to be considered ribbis. Okay, fine. So then it would require better understanding according to the Chachamim why it would constitute ribbis even if I paid back the rent benefit that I received from it. Okay. Anyway, the Gemara now has laid out two pathways in terms of how to understand Rav Meir in that this is not going to be a violation of ribbis. How is it not a violation of ribbis? So we had an approach by Rav Yochanan, an approach by Rava. We continue in the Gemara. We're on Chav Zainam and Beis. V'chacham emor chenoso memkar olam. So according to the Chacham, you could sell it. And you could sell it as a permanent sale. No, there's no buyback clause according to the Chacham. Amar, Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Motel Adam La'ashim Mayim B'soch Da'al Amashot Tfila. So the Gemara now discusses a somewhat related halacha. And that is that one is not allowed to urinate within four amas of where he davened. So I'm Rav Yosef, my Kamash Malam Tanina. So Rav Yosef says, wait one second. We learned this already in the Mishnah. And that is Rav Yehuda Omer Mochana Solushim Chasiv Lokech Mashir Tayase. That according to Rav Yehuda, as long as the sale of the shul is pronounced at the closing as a sale so that it couldn't be used as a chatzir, so then, fine. Then once the purchaser buys it, he could use it for whatever he wants. And Vafila Rabban Lo Karmila Besa Knesses Dikviya Kedusha Sayam. So and even according to the Chachamim of our Mishnah, where we're talking about a shul, and it cannot be transformed into a urinal. That's talking about a shul that is a fixed place for davening. Aval Dal Amos Lo Kviya Kedusha Sayam Lo. So, but if we're talking about Dal Amos, so where in other words, you daven in a location, in any given location. It is not a designated shul. And now, if the only limitation of our Mishnah is that you cannot urinate within the confines of a fixed shul, so that means that if you made a makeshift shul, and I say a shul, what I just simply mean is a place where you daven. So under those circumstances, so now after you finish davening, so you want to urinate in that area, so that would be okay. In other words, our Mishnah is telling us what the limits are. The limits are only in a fixed area that's designated as a shul. But you daven anywhere outside so you can, after you finish davening, the place does not become a makum kadosh, and therefore you can urinate in that area. Good. So basically, what we did is we supported Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel from our Mishnah. Tanita Nakam de Rav Nachman Masbal Marchi Galamus Amashdin. So if you daven in a place, so you now have to distance yourself from that place that you daven. You finish davening, obviously. But you have to distance yourself from that place to four amas in order to urinate. Conversely, if you urinate, so you have to move four amas away from the place of urine in order to daven. Now that's a brachos issue that we discussed back on Chav Gimel, Chav Dalet, and brachos. Amalei Bishlam, Amashim Marchi Dalamus Mespala Tanina. So Kamiyachik Man Minatzoa Dal Amas. So the Gemara says, look, as far as the second point is concerned, been there, done that. Meaning that we already established in brachos. That once there's actual urine or excrement in an area, so you have to distance yourself dal amos. And also they take into consideration that if you could still smell it, so then you have to move even further away. We already discussed that back in brachos. We've already established that. El amos bala marchi dal amos amashin lamali. But flip it around. Meaning you davened in a location, not a shul. In other words, just outside. You davened in the location. And now if you want to urinate in that area now that where you daven is a makum kadosh, and you have to now move four amas away from that area in order to urinate. So yachi kachina lekula shvili denarda. So the Gemara says, rather graphically, the entire road that gets us from here to Naharda, so you won't be able to urinate at any place, and there's no rest stop. Because Baruch Hashem, people are traveling that road all the time. People are davening in all points on the road all the time. So now every point on the road now has become a makum kadosh, and there's no way for you. There's nowhere where you can go ahead and basically use it as a rest stop. And basically, it's an untenable position. Tani Yisha. So the Gemara says, okay. So you're right. You're absolutely right. Meaning, if it's not a shul, if it's just a place where we daven. So once you finish davening there, the place does not become a makum kadosh, and you can go ahead and you can urinate in that area. What we meant was that you have to wait after your davening. How long do you have to wait? So that's what we mean. Bishlam amashin yishakadei hiluch dalamas mishum nitzotzos. So the Gemara says, so here I understand. So the after urinating, so you have to wait as the amount of time that it would take to walk down the Amos because there may be some drops. That, in other words, it will take you just a couple of moments for the urine to totally deplete. But as far as davening is concerned, so why do I have to wait a certain amount of time after davening before urinating? So Amar Avashi should call Da'amut Filasa Sidur Befiv, Urechushe Merachshan Sif Saseh. So the Gemara says, because there is some reverberation of davening, meaning immediately after you finish davening, you're still somewhat contemplating the davening that you were saying, right? The Gemara's description over here is that your lips are still quivering. So in other words, there's some sort of either mental or actual physical reverberation of the davening. So that means to say that when you finish davening, so you got to wait a moment because there's still some lingering effects of the davening, if you will, and then and only then afterwards should you then go ahead and make use of and urinate if you need to. Okay, Adkan. All right, so far this morning we learned the Mishnah on Chav Zayin Amud Beis, talking about the if at all there are any clauses in the sale of a shul. So according to Rav Meir, a really significant clause, and according to the Chachamim, and according to Rav Yehuda, less so. But according to the Chachamim, the place of the shul cannot be used for demeaning activities in the Mishnah. And according to Rav Yehuda, there really is no clause. According to Rav Yehuda, it just happens to be that the actual sale itself, you got to say that's being sold as a chatzar. But once it's sold as a chatzar, then it can be used pretty much for any and every activity that you want. And then what we discussed in the Gemara so far is, according to Rav Meir, there's a buyback clause in the sale of a shul. So if, in fact, the buyback clause is exercised, how is this not a violation of ribbis? And the Gemara gave us two approaches. And then, according to the Chachamim, we said that you cannot use the shul as a urinal after the shul is sold, and after it's, you know, even though it's no longer being used as a shul, you can't use it as a urinal. So we just noted that this halacha, that a makom tefillah cannot be used as a urinal, is only if it's a fixed makom tefillah like a shul. But if you daven outside, the area in which you daven does not become a makom tefillah, and therefore you could urinate right in that area, obviously after you finish davening. And we just learned together that you have to wait a little bit before using that area as a urinal. Okay, Zalfan Siman. Okay, from here until the upcoming Mishnah, which is going to be the first half of today's daf, so it's going to be super enjoyable as we're going to be getting advice lessons in terms of how to prolong our life. So, Shalu Tamidav es Rabbi Zakkai. So we're going to start off with Rabbi Zakkai. So really, the Simanim already tell us that we're going to be focusing on four Tanayim. So we start over here with Rabbi Zakkai. So the students asked him, Amar Rechli Amim, how is it that you had such a long life? Amar Lami Amai Lo Hishtananti Mayim Besoch Da'am Shot Tfilah. So number one, so I never urinated in a makom tefillah. And seemingly over here, what he's saying is that I went above and beyond the letter of the law. Meaning the letter of the law, as we just learned together, is that only a shul cannot be used as a urinal. But over here, even presumably what he meant by this is that even if it was a makeshift makom tefillah, I treated it with kedusha and I wouldn't urinate in that area. Presumably that's what he meant. V'lo chinitzi yishem l'chaveirai. I never described my friend with any kind of nickname whatsoever. Now, there's an Isser Gomor to describe somebody with a pejorative nickname. Right, Tosus over here quotes the Gemara Bamitzia, the HaMechan Hashem L'Chavera. This is Tosus quoting the Gemara Bamitzia, and Daf Nun Ches. HaMechan Hashem L'Chavera Ein L'Chelik Olam Haba. Okay, the Gemara over there speaks in really strong terms about giving somebody a pejorative nickname. So over here, so he praises himself by saying, I never gave anybody a nickname. So Tosus says, even if it's not pejorative. Still, in other words, I would always address people formally with their actual name. So v'lo bitalti kiddush hayom. So and also I made sure to take care of kiddush hayom. Okay, in other words, I would always have wine for kiddush hayom, and I would take extra care to do so. Again, the requires better explanation. Meaning kiddush hayom sounds like something which is baseline halacha. Doesn't sound like something which is extra. Okay, so ima zekena ha'isali pamachas machra ki pasha berusha. So I had an elderly mother, and we didn't have a lot of means. And what she did is she sold kipasha brosha. So she had some sort of handkerchief that she wore in her head, and she sold it so that I would have kiddush. So meaning she knew how important it was to me. Okay, right at face value, it sounds like she sold her head covering in order so that I would have kiddush hayom. It sounds a little bit strange. Okay, well, you have, I don't know if you have to say, but probably she had some sort of other head covering. Anyway, whatever the case is, it certainly signifies the importance of Kiddush Hayom. It was for Rabbi Zakkai. And again, for these things, he had Harichas Yomim. Tanaka Shemesa Hinichalo Gimel Meos Garbi Yayin. So the Gemara quotes a Braisa as a postscript to the story, and that is that when she died, that's mom, so she left for her son 300 barrels of wine. Meaning wine to them was very precious and very dear, and almost like a reward for how careful they were with Kiddush, that they always had wine by Kiddush. So therefore, she died with 300 barrels of wine. We know the number 300 means a lot. So Kishemesu Hinich Levan of Shoshas Alafim Garbi Yayin. And when he died, so his estate so grew exponentially by a factor of 10. So he had 3,000 barrels of wine. Again, the in the schus of being so careful regarding wine for Kiddush on Shabbos, so therefore they were blessed with wine. Rav Huna, have aser risa v'kai kameh de Rav. The Gemara continues. So Rav Huna had some sort of belt, but the belt was really... It was a cheap belt, okay, and it was made out of rubber, whatever. It was a cheap belt, and it was in front of Rav Amar Leh Mai Hai. So Rav says, no, right, you can't afford a belt. So Amar Leh Lo Hava Li Kedusha Mashchantei Lehem Nuneh V'asai Be Kedusha. So Rav Huna explains to Rav, it's very simple. I just simply did not have sufficient funds, so what I did is I sold my belt. I had a good belt, but I sold it so that I could have Kiddush. Wine for Kiddush. So Rav was so impressed with that story, so Rav gave Rav Huna a bracha. And the bracha that he gave to Rav Huna is that you should be wrapped in silk. So that's in other words, basically, the good belts back in the day were made out of silk. And so basically, that was the bracha that Rav gave to Rav Huna. So, ki ichlal rabba brei, Rav Huna... I'm sorry, right, Rabba Brei. So when now, Rav Huna was making a chasna for his son. And Rav Huna, inish gutzahava. Now, in general, Rav Huna was just a shorter man. And gana aporye, and he was sleeping on the bed. Okay, before the chasna, after the chasna, doesn't matter. Anyway, so he was lying down on the bed. And asyam bante vekalte shacham v'shaja minayu alay ade itam b'shiraya. So, and what happened was, is that as he was lying down on the bed, the women didn't notice him. He was so small, diminutive. And so what they did is they took the silk and they put it on the bed. And so now he was wrapped in silk. Ah, a kiyum habracha. So the bracha that was given to him by the Rebbe over here in this case happens to be Rav. And so that he was going to be wrapped in silk and v'kachai, and he was wrapped in silk. Wonderful. Shama Rav Ikbid. Rav heard the story and Rav was so upset. Why in the world was Rav so upset? He gave a bracha. His bracha came true. He was so upset. Yep, he was. So Amar, my time, Amar Li, ki barchita v'chein lamar. He says, look, now Rav is upset to Rav Huna because Rav gave Rav Huna a bracha. What should have been Rav Huna's response? V'chein lamar. The same thing to you. And he didn't say that. So in other words, when you receive a bracha, you have an opportunity to bounce the bracha back on the one who gave you the bracha, and Rav Huna didn't take advantage of the opportunity. Okay, now we know why Rav was upset. Okay, so, but that was all Rabbi Zakkai. Next, we are up to the mnemonic of Lamed, of the Zalpan. We're up to the Lamed. The Lamed over here is a reference to Rabbi Eliezer. I know there's an Aleph in the front, but in other words, we'll put a Chassid Shwang on it. Okay, so it's a Lamed. Anyway, Shalu Tamid is Rabbi Lazar ben Shemua Bamer Erech Yamim. How is it that you had such a long life? Amar Lahemi Amai Lo Asitze Kapanji Lebeis HaKnesses. I never used the shul as a shortcut. V'lo Pasati Al Rashi Am Kadosh. I never walked over the heads of the students. Now, he does not mean literally walked on the heads of the students. What he means is that he never walked into the room while they were already there. It would require them to stand up for him. And so he would have to inconvenience the students. He never did that. V'lonasasi kapai below bracha. And also, in nesias kapayim, whenever I duchened, so, and did brichas kohanim, so you have to make a bracha, and I never did it without a bracha. Again, it requires, these gemaras require more explanation, which unfortunately I'm not going to give, but it requires more explanation. Meaning these acts seem to be very baseline. In other words, I'm duchening, and I did it with a bracha. Meaning any time your Kohen is duchening, he's doing it with a bracha. Okay, so I know these gemaras require more explanation. Shalu tamid avis rev preida b'meir achle yamim. So already, now we're up to the pay, right? There are four tanaim that we're looking at. So we're already up to the prey. This is Rabbi Preida. So I'm lehemi amaylo kadmani adam and base medrash. Nobody ever beat me to the base medrash in the morning. I was always there first. were on the top of Chavches Amad Aleph, v'lo berachtu lefnei Kohen, and also I didn't bench in front of a Kohen, meaning that whenever there was a Kohen that was there and present, so I made sure that he led in the benching. Now remember, back in the good old days, leading in the benching means that they're the ones who say the benching. You listen carefully. You answer amen at the conclusion of every one of the brachas of benching. And that's how benching was done back in the good old days. Nowadays, everybody says the benching to themselves. But back in the good old days, that's how it was done. And what Rebbe Prater is saying is that if there was ever a Kohen present at the meal, I made sure that he was the one who benched. The Gemara in Gittin says, V'kidashto, quoting the pasuk from Parshas Amor. And that means to say that anytime you see a Kohen, you have to be Mekadesh the Kohen. How do you do so? By offering him the ability to bench, to get the first aliyah, etc., etc. Good. V'lo achalti mebehema shelo hurma mas noseha. And on top of that also, I never ate from an animal before the matanos were given. So in the end of Masechta Chulin, the entire perek, it's a short perek, is dedicated to this topic, which is the mitzvah of Zor L'chai V'keva. That from every animal that you shecht, you have to give parts of that animal over to the Kohen. So see the end of Chulin for a description, a detailed description of what parts need to go to the Kohen. Bizman is that we don't do it. Okay, but neither here nor there. What his elevated hakpada would be is that he would never eat from an animal before the matanas were given. Now, by trumas of maestro, so of produce, that's a no-brainer, meaning you're not allowed to eat from the produce before you take off trumas of maestro. However, when it comes to the matanos of an animal, as we're about to see, there's no iser to eat the remaining part of the animal before the matanos were given to the Kohen. Okay, so good. So he took it upon himself as a chumrah. So the Gemara quotes B'shem Rav Yitzchak that it is usher to eat from any other part of the animal before the matanos were given over to the Kohen. More technically and more faithfully translated, it means that you separated the parts that were to be given over to the Kohen. Anyone who eats from an animal prior to the separation of the parts given to the Kohen, it's as if you eat tevel. Now, even the language, ki'ilu ochel tevel. It's as if you ate tevel because it's not mamish tevel. And by the way, the Gemara throws in as a parenthetical note, that's not the halacha. Meaning the halacha is that yes, you're obligated to give zor l'chai v'keva over to a Kohen. However, it's not like trumas amaisos of produce. Meaning you can eat from the animal even though you haven't separated Zor L'chai V'keva and given it over to the Kohen.
What do slaughterers do today?
Okay, good question. Just on another occasion. V'lo beirachtu lefnei Kohen. And on top of that also, again, I wouldn't bench when there was a Kohen that was present. So, l'meimer d'mal yusehi v'amar av yochan kol tamachachim shemavarach lefanav afilu Kohen gadol amaretz osu tamachachim chayv misa. So the Gemara now notes, but wait one second. If you're a Talmid Chacham, if there's a Kohen in the room, you still should take the role of the Mivarech. You should bench if you're a Talmid Chacham. And even if there's a Kohen there, and he says much stronger than that, he says is that if there's a Kohen, the Afilo Kohen Gadol, Amaretz also Talmid Chacham Chayv Misa. So even if the Kohen over there happens to be a Kohen Gadol, but he's not the most learned Kohen Gadol. A Kohen Gadol is not learned? Sure. We saw that in Yuma numerous times. Right, what they would do for the Kohen Gadol is that they would basically I hate to say it, but the Gemara in Yuma says some Kohanim were illiterate. Okay, so they had to read to him. Anyway, the point is that so if you're Talmid Chacham there, you need to assume the role of the Mevarchi of the bench, and if you defer to a Kohen Gadol Amaretz. So you're chayv misa. That's really strong language. So in other words, if you're Talmid Chacham and you're not upholding the Kavod HaTorah, so you're causing a certain hatred towards the Kadosh Baruch Hu, because you represent Torah and you should be the one benching. So the Gemara says, Ki kamar iyu b'shavin. Okay, so the Gemara says, okay. So you're right. In other words, under the circumstance where there was another Kohen in the room and he wasn't a Talmid Chacham, so I wouldn't defer to the Kohen. I'm talking about a scenario where the Kohen was a Talmid Chacham. So if we're together in a room and the Kohen's a Talmid Chacham, I'll defer to the Kohen. That's all I meant. Okay. Shalu Talmidav is Rabbi Nechunya ben Akana. Okay, and so this brings us now to number four. Okay, there are four Tanaim that we are looking into in terms of their practices and result in a long life. And so now we're up to Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. So I never honored myself, elevated myself by degrading others. I never went to bed cursing another person. In other words, every night I went to bed, I always forgave everybody. And I was never a stickler when it comes to my own money. So in other words, somebody, I overpaid a little bit, okay. So the Gemara now is just going to elaborate on these particular issues. So as far as Rav Huna is concerned, Darimara Akadfei. Ki had Rav Huna Darimara Akadfei. As far as Rav Huna was concerned, he would put a load on his own shoulders, meaning he wouldn't have other people carry it for him. Asa Rav Chana Bar Chanilai V'kadari Minei. And Rav Chana Bar Chanilai says, no, let me take that load off of you. So Amarlei, Regilta Dadari B'masei Chadari. V'ilo Idyakure Ana B'zilusi Ditcha Lo Nichali. And so he says, look, if you are a kind of person where people see you doing menial labor out in public, fine. But he says, but if you don't normally do it, so I'm not ready to get honor just because you're ready to demean yourself. So I'm not prepared to do that. So the Gemara is just simply giving an example of what it would look like to elevate yourself by demeaning another person. So the Gemara also does a little bit more detail regarding the second example, which is forgiving everybody. Truth of the matter is we could have figured this out even without the Gemara's example, but okay, the Gemara gives an example. So ki hava salak lepori, every time that Marzucha would go to bed, amar sharle lechom man desaran. So he forgave everybody that bothered him. Okay, so he held no grudges whatsoever and total forgiveness on a nightly basis for anybody and everybody. And yeah. It's in the nusach. It's in the nusach of Kriyashma. And finally, vachrum b'mamona ha'yisi. And on top of that, I always was easygoing when it came to my own money. And the Gemara says that this was a common practice as related to Eov, in that he overpaid, he overspent a little bit whenever buying something. Okay. Rabbi Kiva's Rabbi Nechunya Hagadol. Rabbi Kiva asked the following to Rabbi Nechunya Hagadol. So we're pretty much done, but we're not done. Obviously, the Gemara is going to continue this discussion until the bottom of the Amud. But the Simanim gave us four Tanaim. We covered the four Tanaim. Okay, so I guess we're in the bonus round over here. So Rabbi Kiva asked Rav Nechunya, so Bameh Harach LeYamim. So how is it that you have such a long life? Now, if you don't ask the question carefully, it could be misunderstood. Meaning, boy, aren't you done yet? Okay, so, right, it could be understood. So, Asu Gavzai V'Kamachule. So the handlers of Rav Nechunya Gadol, so they didn't take well to Rabbi Akiva's question, right? Maybe the tone was a little bit off. Whatever the miscommunication was, so they didn't understand, like, hey, please teach me all the wonderful things that you've done over your life that enabled you to live such a long life. They understood it to mean, boy, are you old, right? Isn't it enough already? So apparently the intent of the question got a little bit lost over here, and the handlers were really upset. In fact, how upset were they? You don't have to wonder. So v'kamachulei. So they started hitting Rabbi Akiva. Salak Yosef Aresha Didikla, to the point where Rabbi Akiva had to run up a tree in order to stop with the beatings. Okay, great imagery. So Amalei Rabbi Im Nemar Kevaslama Nemar Echad. So Rabbi Akiva now from the top of the tree yells down to Rabbi Nechunya Hagadol. I have a question. If the Torah says the word keves by the Tamid, by the carbon Tamid, so why does it say echad? Keves already is in the singular. Torah doesn't have to say the word echad. So basically, I'm sure there's much more embedded within the question. But basically, in the question, he was showing Rabbi Nechunya, hey, I'm one of you. I'm a Talmud Chacham, right? I wasn't asking it in a degrading manner, in a profane manner. I just wanted to know, like, what are some of your practices that I could emulate? Okay. So Amar Lutzor by the Rabbanu Shavkua. So Rabbi Nechunya Agadol now understood, oh, he's a Talmud Chacham, leave him alone. So Amar Lei Echad Miyucha Shebe'edro. And he answered his question also. And the Torah says, Echad Miyucha Shebe'edro. meaning that for the carbon tamid, so don't just take any of the sheep, take one that's exceptional. Amalei mi'amai, so good. So now, to the original question, so what have you done? What are some of your practices that helped you enjoy such a long life? Amalei mi'amai lo kibalti matanos. I never accepted gifts. V'lo amalati amidosai. And on top of that, also, I let things go, and v'atrambe mamone ayisa. And like we saw earlier, I was relaxed when it comes to my money. So lo kibalti matanos ki hadu ravi elazar ki avim eshajrila matanos mi benisiya. The Gemara gives some follow-ups over here. So the idea that I never accept gifts, again, we couldn't figure this out without the Gemara's example, but the Gemara gives an example with Reb Elazar. So the Beinisiyah, right, so from the high office in the country, they sent him gifts. Lo have a shakal, and he never accepted the gifts. Kiava mizamnele, lo have a azil. And when they invite him over for dinner, for the presidential dinner, he never showed up. So he didn't accept the offer. Amr lehu lo nichali de achiyai. And in response, in the RSVP, he said, look, I'm really sorry, with regrets, I'm not coming. And by the way, mind you, right, you wouldn't mind if I lived a little longer, right? That wouldn't bother you so much. Right? It's a pasuk, the pasuk in Mishlei, that somebody who hates gifts is going to end up living a long life. So by me rejecting the gifts and any consideration that you give me, so all it means is I'm going to live longer. So you'll of course understand why it is I'm declining coming to accepting any gifts, coming to your dinners. Rabbi Zera kiyav mishadrele mi benisiyah lo have a shakel. Similarly, Rabbi Zera also rejected all gifts that came from the president's office. However, kiyav mizamnele azel. But he differed a little bit in that he would go to dinner. In other words, when he was invited for the presidential dinner, he would attend. Samra it yakure de midyakre bi. And so Rabbi Zera says, look, who's getting honored if I go to the dinner? It's not me that's getting honored, meaning because I'm arriving at their dinner, they're really getting honored. Now, I know it does not sound like the most modest thing that a person could say, but again, probably just it's not so much him being arrogant, just simply understanding where he stood, where was his status. Lo amarati amidosai, we're up to the second practice of Nechunya Hagadol. The Gemara gives an example. Amareva kol amavir amidosav, maavir memena kol peshav, shenemer no se'ava v'over al-pesha, lemino se'ava lemisha over al-pesha. Somebody who is maavir amidosav, meaning somebody slighted you and you forgive him immediately. All right? And you let things go. So when you let things go, HaKadosh Baruch Hu treats you in kind. HaKadosh Baruch Hu also lets things go by you. So you're an avarian and you do tshuva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will let it go. Shal Rabbi is Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha ben Merech Leyamim. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha was asked the question by Rabbi, how did you live such a long life? Amar Le Katzta Bichayai. And he says, what do you mean, how did I live such a long life? You're done with me? Meaning, that's it? And again, same miscommunication, right? He didn't really hear in the question what he was driving at. He wasn't asking like, new, that's enough already. What he was asking was, give me some of your practices. So Amar Lo Rebbe Tori Hiu Lomod Ani Tzarech. So good. So clarification. I'm asking from a Torah standpoint. I want to know, like, where can I improve? Amar Lo Mi'amal Lo Nisakalti B'dmus Adam Rasha. I never looked at the face of an evil man. Amar Rav Yochanan Asur La Adam Nisakal B'tzalam D'mus Adam Rasha. You're not allowed to look at an evil man. Shenemar Lu Le Pnei Yosef Melch Yehuda. And you know, say, Im Abit Elecha V'im Ereka. So the pasuk in Malachim Beis, the beginning of Malachim Beis, Elisha says that I'm just simply not going to be looking at the tzura of an Adam Rasha. Rav Elazar Amar Enav Kehos. So Rav Elazar says another consequence at looking at an Adam Rasha is that your eyes diminish. Shenemar V'yikah Zaken Yitzchak V'atichahena Enav Meraos. So Yitzchak started losing his eyesight as he got older. So Mishum D'Yitzchak B'Esav Rasha. So, and the reason why is because he looked at Esav. Now Esav was his son. So that is obviously it's a hard stance of the Gemara. Okay, but the Gemara takes that stance.
Another story about how
Vahagar Marle, so the Gemara says, wait 1 second. Right, that's why Yitzchak had diminished eyesight. The Gemara says, I thought there was another cause. So the Gemara says, meanwhile, and this should sound familiar, because we did this Gemara earlier in our Masechta, and that is the episode with Avram and Avimelech. And so when all said and done, I'm not going to go through the whole story right now, but when all said and done, so Avimelech returned Sarah, and says, look, I'm going to give you a little bit of money, and this should be ksus einecha, literally a covering of the eyes, meaning this should basically, right, I'll give you a little money for everything that you went through. So, and meanwhile, but ksus einecha is also a klala, right? In other words, your eyes should be covered. Now, Avram didn't actually receive the klala, but the klala was there, and then it came in the next generation with Yitzchak. So the Gemara says, okay, so now what we have are two causatives to Yitzchak's poor eyesight. But the Gemara says, okay, have a hagarmale. Okay, so second time in our Masechta, we talked about two causatives. If you remember, we had by Levi. Levi ended up having a dislocation of his hip. Okay. Yeah, right. Rashi brings it down. Look, right, when we, you'll see various midrashim giving different explanations. So it happens to be that our Gemara points to two causations. Okay, it doesn't mean it's limited to these opinions. Happens to be in our Gemara, that's what we're saying over today. Okay. Other midrashim give other interpretations. Good. So so by Levi also, we had a double cause. Okay. Rava Amra Mehacha Se'ez Panai Rasha Lotov. Lotov. And so Rav quotes a different pasuk that speaks to this idea that you're not allowed to look at the face of an Adam Rasha. Bishas Petira So, Amrle Rebbe Bracheni. So at the time of his death, so he asked for a bracha. Right? This is by Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. So Amrle Yeratzon Shetagil Chatzi Yamai. So he says, look, I lived a really long life. You should live about half as long as I lived. Now, to which you hear that as a bracha, and you're thinking to yourself, "What? What? That? What?" So ulechul alo am ulechul alo. So he says, "What do you mean? Why can't I live as long as you live? What's wrong with that?" So am alo habayim acharecha habayim acharecha behema yiru. And the way Rashi understands this is basically, what's going to happen is that if you live a really long life, so your kids are going to always live in your shadow. And they're never going to really be, take a leadership position because you're always there. And so, yeah. So part of the bracha is that you shouldn't live such a long life because you do want your children to have moments in moments to shine. The two sons of Ihi, right, the Avua bar Ihi and Minyamin bar Ihi. So both of them say that, look, how do they receive such a long life? So one says because he never looked at a kusi, and the other one says because he never made a partnership with a kusi. Shalu Talmidav is Rabbi Zera b'Me'arach le'Yamim. So we get one more before we turn the page, and that's Rabbi Zera. How did you live such a long life? Amalam miyamai lo ikpadati b'toch beisi. I never got angry in my own home. V'lo tsa'adati b'fanai mishagado mimeni. Never stepped in front of somebody who was greater than me. And I never had thoughts of Torah while going through a dirty place that had a foul smell, and you're not allowed to learn Torah in such an environment. Below Torah, below tefillin, and I never walked 4 amos without Torah, without tefillin. Below yishanti bebeis hamedrash, lo shenis keva, below shenis arai. I never took a nap in the beis medrash. Below sasti betekalas chaverai. I never was happy when my friend stumbled. And finally, v'lo karati lechaverei bechanicha so, v'amrilei bechachina so. And I never called my friend a nickname, like we discussed earlier. Okay. V'odam Rav Yehuda. We're now on the bottom of Chavches Amin Aleph, and we are continuing with the Mishnah. The Mishnah is over here talking about the Kedushas of a Beis HaKnesses. V'odam Rav Yehuda. So Rav Yehuda additionally says, so you recall, I mean, we were here this morning. So this is a take, this is a continuation of Rav Yehuda by Shul. Rav Yehuda says, by Shul, mochrin oso l'shem chatzir, you could sell a shul as a chatzir, but then once the purchaser buys it, he could do with it as he pleases. So now, ve'odam a Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda additionally says, basically, nesha shecharav ein maspina betocho. So a shul now that is no longer functional, it's a defunct shul. However, don't give a eulogy in the shul, ve'ein mafshilim betocho chavalim. Don't do work where just basically I need a big field in order to twist some rope. Okay, fine. That area is fine. No. In other words, it was once a shul, so therefore you can't do these kinds of demeaning labors over there. Vein portion l'socha mitzudos. Don't set traps over there in that area. Vein shotchen al gago peros. You can't go to the rooftop of the abandoned shul in order to dry your fruit. Vein osin oso kapandria. You cannot use it as a shortcut. Shenemra vashimosi es mikdashchem kedusha sam af kishein shomimim. So even though the shul is no longer in use, it's a defunct shul, nevertheless, it still retains its kedusha. Let grass grow in the area so that people will see it and people that will have agmas nefesh that the shul has no longer been in use. In other words, you want people to have an emotional reaction to the fact that the shul is no longer being used. As far as shuls are concerned, so no kalas rosh in the shul. It can't be lighthearted in a shul. You don't eat in the shul. You don't drink in the shul. I know. Our treatment of the shul is not whatever. Okay. We'll talk in tomorrow's daf regarding tanayim, making a condition before making a shul. Okay. The ain ne osin behem, you can't beautify yourself in the shul. Ain metalim behem, you can't take a stroll in the shul. Ain nechnasim behem, bechama mimne chama gshamim mimne gshamim. You can't walk in the shul seeking some relief from either the heat or from the rain. Vein mafsinim behem, vein maspidin behem, hesped shal yachid. You can't eulogize in the shul. Aval korin behem, vishonim behem. You can learn in the shul. You can both chumash and mishnah. And if there is a public figure that needs to be eulogized, that you can do in the shul. I'm Rav Yehuda Mesabi Yishuvan. Be Yishuvan. That's talking about when the shul is currently in use. But once the shul is defunct, so what you should do is you should let grass grow in the area. And allow people to have this kind of emotional reaction as they go back, as they walk past the defunct shul. So the Gemara says, "Grass, how did that come up in discussion?" Chesuri mechzor v'hachi ketan. The Gemara says, "Good. So what's happening over here is that we're missing a little bit." So what you're supposed to do in general is you're supposed to tend to the shul so that the shul doesn't have grass growing over there. Meaning, make sure the shul looks good. And I'm Rav Yehuda Mesabi Shuvan. And now Rav Yehuda says, good. That's when the shul is in usage. Aval b'chor banan, but once the shul is no longer in usage, manich naso la'alos. Alu b'hanasavim lo yidlosh mimnei agmas nefesh. Now, so you let the weeds grow. In other words, once the shul is defunct, so now you want people to see the shul in its defunct state and emotionally react to the fact that people are no longer using the shul. Coming up in this daf, and that is the Rav Asi says that the shuls in Bavel, so they're made conditionally. Now, still, that doesn't mean that you can go into shul and be really, really mundane over there. My Neil, what does that mean? Being mundane in shul, so being lightheaded in shul, cheshbanos, in other words, doing calculations, basically doing some sort of business. Calculation in the shul. In other words, the thoughts in the shul should be more elevated, even if the shul is made out tonight. I'm Rav Asi Beis HaKnesses Shemechashvim Bo Cheshbonos Malinin Bo Es HaMeis. So if you have a shul where people are just doing business in the shul all the time, so then you'll have Halanas HaMeis. Literally translated, there will be dead people left over in shul. Now, Malinin Sagadascha, what does that mean? It's an obligation. So the Gemara says, "Lo sagi de lav hachi, ela lesof sheyilino bo meis mitzvah." It just means that it's an onish, meaning because people are so lightheaded in shul and so do not give the shul the proper reverence that it deserves. So as a result of that, there will be a meis mitzvah discovered in the shul, and that will be it will be an onish. Ein ne osin b'hem. We're going to do a little bit more this morning. So Amar Rav Chachamim v'Talmidei Mutarim d'Amar Rav Yishua ben Levi Mai Bei Rabbanan Beisa de Rabbanan. So we said that you cannot basically use the shul as your home. The Gemara says, yeah, that's true, but a Talmid Chacham, so they basically, their shuls are like their second home, and so therefore they can, now it sounds like they can beautify themselves in the shul, and generally speaking, right, the Talmid Chachamim should not be so focused on their looks. Maybe the Gemara over here is referring to the napping in the shuls and that sort of thing. Okay. The Gemara over here certainly seems to be talking even about the Beis HaKnesses, but you're right. Right, the Beit Rabbanan usually is a base medrash. That part's true. But in context, though, the Gemara is certainly talking about a shul. And finally, they were asking questions from Rava, Asa Zilcha Demitra. And then it started pouring, Eilele Beit Kenishta. So they run to shul. So Amrei Haida Eilele Beit Kenishta Lamisham Mitra. So he's a point of clarification. Don't think we ran into the shul for relief from the rain. Even though that's true, but that's not the pshat. Ela mishum deshmaita bayit luse kiyuma deischana. It just happens to be right now that you asked me a question and I need to concentrate. I'm going to have a really tough time concentrating in the rain. So over here, I just needed to clear my head. So amale ravacha breid rav la ravashi eats rechle linish lemikre gavra mi bekenishta my. So let's say you need to go into shul but to call somebody out. So in other words, you're not going into shul to daven, you're calling to shul just basically to fetch somebody. So how do you page people in shul? So I'm related, super mirabban hu lema hilchasa. So let's say he's a tamach chacham, so good. So now what you'll do is you'll walk into shul, you'll say over halacha while you're in shul. Okay, good. So now you didn't just haphazardly walk into shul. So you learned in shul, good. V'itana hu lema masnisa. Now if you know Mishnah, is great. And say over Mishnah, v'ikara hu lema psuka. So, but, and if you're a Baal Kori, say over a Pasuk, V'ilo, Le'malei Linuka, Emali Psukeach. So, and if you don't know how to say over a Psukim, so then go over to a child and ask him to teach you a Pasuk. So, Inam, Inishe Porta Venekum. Or, additionally, so what you'll do is you'll walk into the shul, you'll sit for a while, and then afterwards you'll get up and then you'll retrieve whoever you wanted to go in there and get. Okay, some comments of the Gemara regarding the Kedusha of a basic Knesset. We're going to pause over here. Okay, good. All right, so quickly to recap what we saw this morning, we started all the way back in the Mishnah, Chav Zayin Amud Beis, regarding the sale of a shul, where a mayor throws in this stipulation that when you sell a shul, you have to sell it with a buyback clause, where the seller can always buy back the shul. The Gemara says if he exercises that clause, is that not going to be a violation of Ribbis? The Gemara discusses, the Gemara gives two approaches, Rav Yochanan and Rava, both give an approach in terms of how to deal with that issue. When you sell a shul, according to the Chachamim, it cannot be used as a bathroom. So the Gemara says, what about a makeshift shul, meaning a place where you daven? So that area is an area where you could use that area as a makeshift bathroom because it wasn't a shul, meaning it just happened to have been a place you daven. You do have to wait a requisite amount of time after you daven, but you can go ahead and you can urinate in that place. The Gemara noted that Rabbi Zakkai, as part of his plan, his long-term plan of living a long life, so he never did that. So that now segued into the Gemara and really half of today's daf in terms of various Tanaim and what they did in order to enjoy such a long life. So we were given a lot of etzas today in terms of Bameh Harach LeYamim. Chav Ches Amud Aleph all the way on the bottom. Rabbi Yehuda adds another point, and that is that once a shul is destroyed, so still, the area has a certain amount of Kedusha and the limitations of what you can do with that area, because even though the shul is defunct, nevertheless, there still is a Kedusha Zamakom. And then the Gemara talks about on the bottom of the Amud to the top of the Amud Beis. So once you have a shul, so you have to have Kedusha Zamakom, and therefore, things you can't do in shul. You can't eat, you can't drink, you can't adorn yourself in shul, etc., etc. The Gemara says is that even if a shul is made al tanai, still you can't have cheshbonos in the shul, right? To basically think about business and to talk in business with one with another. So in other words, those are activities that you cannot do in shul, even if the shul is made al tanai. Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to use the shul a little bit more like a home, because for them it is like a second home, and using the shul as relief from the weather, or to use the shul, or to basically walk into shul in order to pay somebody. So the Gemara says that you should not do. We'll stop over here.